Welcome to the House Education Committee. Today is Friday, April 9th, 2010. Present are Representative Keller, Wilson, Edmund, Garner, Gardner, Book, myself, Chair Seaton. Don't forget your cell phones. Today we're going to have a discussion with school districts on the education in five districts that are on the improvement list. That there's been intensive work with by the department, and also a number of incentives that we have put forward and funded through the legislature. We're also then going to talk about the performance incentive program that was instituted in 2007 and 2009. The committee has a report of that, of the results, but those are exit survey results, and you know, we want to deal more with looking at exit surveys from the districts and what the districts found and identified as the reasons that they were able to have greater than anticipated or average achievement. And so those are the contents of our meeting today. I want to set a little stage here and make sure that everybody understands that you know, of course, there is a lawsuit that's Moore versus the state of Alaska. It's been ongoing. It's been various reports. What we're wanting to do today is find out the efforts that have been made, if there are ways that those, from the school district perspectives, that those could be implemented more effectively, or some ways in which we could change the situations for the better, because we have been active this entire two-year cycle, the Education Committee, in trying to make improvements for all levels of education across the state of Alaska, whether that's pre-K programs, which we heartily supported, or whether that is university and vocational technical education. So we are going to go to those communities, and again, what we're asking for is not just complaints or arguments. What we're asking for is positive suggestions, ways to any positive suggestions that the superintendents have would be very beneficial to us, and especially ways in which we can improve education and outcomes for students across the state. So with that, we have we're first going to take the Moore case, and we have Norman Eek as our first person from Northwest Arctic School District. And Norman, I wanted to let you know that the committee does have your written testimony, and you're welcome to go through that. Just so you know, we have it in front of us as well. And so would you go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent for the record, and appreciate your testimony.
Thank you so very much. It's an honor to be here this morning. For the record, I'm Dr. Norman Eek, superintendent of Northwest Arctic Grove School District. I've been employed as an administrator in this district for 12 years, and this is my fifth year as superintendent. Last year, I was the Alaska State Superintendent of the Year. On a personal note, I have two adopted children, both born in Calcutta, India. My son's 16 and my daughter's 14. Both have had their entire school experience in the Northwest Arctic Borough Schools. Both have scored highly on the state's required tests. My wife is a teacher in the Kotzebue High School, and she dearly loves her students. At this time, it will do us little good to review the difficult history of intervention that the Department of Education has put upon these five districts. We have learned from the mistakes made, and we can move forward in a collaborative manner with solid solutions to the problems that we have to address. I think this can all be done in discussions over the next couple months. While it is true that our system of public education has its shortcomings, it will do us no good to lament about what is wrong. Doing so will weaken and divide us. What we need to do now is join in our efforts and our actions to provide strength to our classroom teachers and power to the lessons that they teach our students. Some blame the poor test scores on past years on poverty. Some blame it on teachers, administrators, the school boards, parents, the local community, and even on the ability of our children. I do not buy any of that. The truth is, though, blame accomplishes nothing. When I take an honest look at my own school district, I see many things that we do quite well, and some things that leave substantial room for improvement. Over the years, many educational programs have been implemented and perpetrated upon our students. Many educational experiments have been done in the name of educational improvement. These programs were perhaps well-intended, but all too often poorly executed. Let us agree that there are no silver bullets. Producing better results requires informed decision-making, appropriate training, levels of commitment, support, persistence, and accountability that until now have been difficult to achieve or sustain. We know that students living in poverty can achieve at high levels and be successful in school. There is ample research to document not only that it happens, but there are successful strategies we can employ. We have seen this in the Northwest Arctic in the past few years, where several schools that were poor performers have had increased test scores that we are very proud of. In order to move us forward, I would like to comment on four issues of importance. These are issues that you, as legislators, can address. And your actions in the legislature will bring the educational futures of our students to the higher level of success that is needed. First, I would like to say that the single most important element in improving educational scores in Northwest Arctic is not anything in the school. It is to provide public safety to the families and especially the children in our villages. I commend the governor's initiative to increase the ranks of village police safety officers. This needs to be complemented with an equal number of additional state troopers. No one in Juneau or Anchorage would feel safe if the streets were patrolled by unarmed VPSOs. We expect to have state troopers and city police on duty to keep us safe. This factor cannot be overlooked in improving children's educations in rural Alaska. Secondly, early childhood education must be in place to ensure the success of our students by the third grade. For we know that if a child is not reading at grade level by the third grade, he or she has a 50% likelihood of dropping out of school. We need at minimum a two-year kindergarten program where four-year-olds can come to school and be counted as full FTEs. That would fund the additional teachers required for the program. Parental involvement has to be a major element included in the program as well. Early childhood programs must be intentional learning environments, academically based, taught by certified teachers, and they must adopt the 9 standards that are nationally recognized as components of quality early childhood programs. Let me illustrate. Our kindergarten children come to school and take a test called the Kindergarten Developmental Profile. In the areas of socialization and kinesthetic abilities, our children are on par with the average students across Alaska. However, in the areas of precognitive abilities and pre-reading, they are on average 2 to 3 years behind. That is for students who are 5 years old. How can you expect students to not only gain a year's growth in a year's span of time, but by third grade, just within 4 years, expect them to make up an additional 2 to 3 years of development? These children do not come to school impaired. They have simply lacked the language and cognitive developmental experiences that most children across America have received. They need language and numerical cognitive experience to be built into the early learning and kindergarten programs. Much research, evidence, and documentation is available to substantiate this. Third, let me address teaching capacity. The department this past year has done a lot to improve its ability to provide support to teachers. However, it's not sufficient to the need of the teachers that this is directed at. For teachers new to rural Alaska, there should be a 2-week to a 4-week pre-service program that would provide orientation to the cultural setting the teacher is going to, the curriculum to be taught, and the life ways of the people the teacher is going to serve. Districts cannot afford this out of their regular operating budget. Another needed program is for teaching certification programs to be offered by our universities in the state that provide an emphasis and specialty in teaching in rural Alaska. A much overlooked answer in this area is the development of specific teacher training programs to be offered to our rural Alaska students, where they can have a direct pathway from high school graduation to a bachelor's degree and certification as a teacher. Magnet-type school opportunities should exist. Smaller regional boarding facilities and rural hub cities can provide the specialization for our students who have high level of abilities but cannot go to Mount Edgecumbe. We have 70 high schools in rural Alaska with 10 or fewer high school students. Strategically placed, smaller Mount Edgecumbe-type boarding facilities is an idea whose time has come. Fourth, targeted assistant programs for our rural schools need to be in place. A model for this is one that the Anchorage School District has provided. Examine the history of Mountain View Elementary School. 8 years ago, it was considered a school that was failing its students. With specific targeted assistance programs and personnel, it was restructured into being a beacon of success for its community and the children who go there. This school has consistently, over the past 5 years, had high levels of academic achievement by its students. It has made adequate yearly progress as measured by NCLB. The targeted assistance at Mountain View included additional staffing comprised of a school psychologist, community liaison, English as a second language specialist, a reading specialist, and a speech pathologist. All this for a 300 to 400 student school. In summation, we can do much to bring our rural students in rural Alaska to high academic achievement. This effort will require our determination and commitment, but the pathway is clear. Research has shown that to adopt and fund and properly implement the four issues I've discussed here this morning will bring success to our students. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eek. And we have questions from the committee. And I appreciate this. And I would like to mention that if we ask a question on a subject that you don't feel like you're prepared to answer, you don't have the data before you, you for any reason decide to decline to answer, that's fine. This is not a, you know, court of law. We are inquiring from you and from all the testifiers today about soliciting information, but this is not an adversarial process in any means. So please don't take any of the questions that way. Please feel free to expound upon your answers so that we get the full meaning of your opinion on that matter. So it you don't have to make them short yes or no answers, because we're actually wanting to have kind of a dialogue, but it will be through the chair, so that we don't get any type of one-on-one dialogue going. Representative Gardner is first, and then Book, and then Wilson.
Thank you. And thank you very, very much for your testimony, Mr. Eck, and particularly giving it to us in writing and verbally, and probably your background in education that lets you understand that some of us need to see it in writing to get the whole impact of it. So I appreciate it very much. And I have actually questions about each of your four points, but I'll restrain myself to asking first about what you say is the single most important element in improving education. I have a background as a guardian ad litem, and I understand that when children are in crisis or don't feel safe, they can't focus on academic tasks before them. But that's kind of an inside their house safety oftentimes. And I'm just curious about your belief that public safety in a community is the biggest impediment right now to student success. And I'm paraphrasing what you actually said. So I guess I'm asking, if you're talking about village public safety officers, keep these children safe from what?
Thank you so much. Through the chair, thank you very much for your question. Yes, from living in smaller villages, living in Kotzebue here, Kotzebue has police officers. We have the troopers stationed here. We have much higher levels of academic success in the schools here. In smaller villages where there are no police officers, most of our villages don't even have VPSOs, unfortunately. There's so many activities that go on in the evening by different folks where families don't feel safe, children don't feel safe, children come to school exhausted, sometimes they don't feel it's safe to go home, they have to sleep out somewhere. There isn't the safe environment at home that the rest of us all know and expect. Now, this is not in every family. Don't think I mean that. However, if you have a classroom of 20 students and there's four or five that are very upset or concerned or worried or have not had their rest, it impedes the work of the classroom. Also, times children who come to school act out, you know, when they're overtired. This, again, impedes the progress of the classroom. But we have, as we know the rates that we have in Alaska that are just terrible in terms of violence, domestic abuse, things like that. We have to face that square on. And facing that square on can bring the order to our families and the safety to our families that's needed. You have to have that first in place. Children have to come to school ready to learn. You know, a part of that also is having counselors and social workers. We have only two social workers for our entire region, stationed in Nome, and then there's a couple more over in Fairbanks, and they serve this huge geographic region, you know, hundreds of miles east to west and north and south. The families here, the children need the order put into their lives. They need to be able to rest upon them.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Gardner, what I'm going to do is I'd like to change the way we testify a little bit. Since Mr. Eek has provided us the testimony here, what I would like to do, and I think you've started going over the first point, and so I would like to see if there's any other questions on the first point from other committee members so that we don't jump Mr. Eek back and forth and we can fully discuss the point. Follow up on this point.
I have a follow up. Thank you. I sort of feel like we're jumping around and not calling a spade, if you will. Are you saying that you want public safety officers to address the problems of alcoholism, domestic violence, and sexual abuse? And if so, my question is, what is the status of substance abuse treatment? Is that available for these people? Are we not kind of missing things if you provide police or public safety officers without the substance treatment of being available in these communities?
You're absolutely correct. However, there are elements of all those programs in place. I'm sorry, through the chair.
That's fine.
There are elements of those things in place. However, it's not sufficient and it's not adequate. And thank you for calling a spade a spade.
Thank you. Are there other questions on this point? Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Eek, thank you very much for coming forward with your testimony. It does encapsulate the finer points of the discussions we've been having here for over a year. On your point, are you aware that the governor has committed to putting, I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of a dozen more VPSOs out in the various rural areas?
Through the chair, yes, sir, I am, and I commend the governor for that, as you read in my comments. I've also talked to the governor about that, also with Commissioner Masters. My point is that we don't have enough. We need dozens and dozens more. We also need at least an equal number of troopers to go along with that. A hospital would not be effective if all it had were nurses. You need doctors in a hospital. A hospital would also not be effective if it didn't have nurses. It takes both. We need VPSOs in our villages, and we need troopers or strongly trained village police officers in place in all of our villages to make our children safe.
Follow-up, Representative Boot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, I was elected in 2006, came here in 2007. At that time, there were 34 funded positions for state troopers. We have about 38 or 39 currently funded. The reason we don't have troopers is because the academy refuses to lower their standards. The caliber of those recruits and recruitments are not at the level that they're willing to accept. Do you have any recommendations for getting a higher caliber of recruits so that we could put those boots on the ground?
Through the chair, thank you for the question. Of course, I'm not in the business of public safety. I only have my students and children suffer because we don't have public safety in place. We have a similar problem with properly and adequately trained teachers in rural Alaska. So it's very parallel to that. So to blame what goes on then is that children get blamed for not being able to have the full achievement that they should be able to have because they don't have the proper supports in place. And so therefore we blame schools, we blame children for things that are out of the children's hands. And I understand what you're saying, and I say we have the same thing in terms of inadequately trained teachers for working in this rural setting.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions, Mr. Eek, on the first point? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Norman, are there any, I mean, I'm just thinking how impossible this is to have two people in every single village. Are there any villages at all connected by roads, or are they all totally isolated?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, thank you, and good morning to you. And to the chair, my last name is pronounced Eck. I'm not like the town Eek in rural Alaska. My name is Eck, E-C-K. It's Norwegian. We don't, in Northwest Arctic, Representative Wilson, we don't have any towns connected by roads. However, it's not an insurmountable cost to think about how to be able to serve. Like right now, something that I want to commend the governor for too, because when I talked to the governor about these problems last fall and a select group of legislators back in the first part of December, told him about our need, he increased the state trooper contingent in Kotzebue by two. And I was very grateful to him for that. But perhaps, since Kotzebue has police, it would be best to take our contingent of seven troopers and put them into our villages instead of having them here in Kotzebue. So that way, they're right there. So when there is a rape, when there is an assault, they can respond immediately to it because they are right there. That's my thought. But again, I'm not an expert on those matters. I'm simply talking in terms of the needs that the children have, and not just in Northwest Alaska. That's across Alaska. We do provide schools in every village, so why would it be impossible to provide public safety in the villages?
And thank you very much for that. And we do want to make sure that we're asking you about your area of expertise as far as how to accomplish those things, but we do very much appreciate you bringing out, you know, the problem. Is there any other questions on this point? But thank you very much on that. Let's go to the through your testimony the way we have it. So let's go on to the second point on early childhood education. And can you, before we go further on that, can you let us know, did the pilot pre-K program that we put in place, did Northwest Arctic, was that involved, and does it have a one of those programs?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did apply. We were denied funding. There's no reason, in my opinion, for a pilot program. We know, it's known across America, that early childhood education works. We also know that it's needed and it's required if you want to provide for the academic success of children. So there was no need for a pilot. Elements of that pilot program is an intensive research base and study and assessment, and a good percentage of the money is going to administration rather than to the direct instruction of children. We need two-year kindergarten, as I stated, that's intentional learning, where it's academically based, done by certified teachers. There does not need to be a new structure put in place, does not need to be studied. We simply need to allow four-year-olds to come to kindergarten and allow them to be counted just as we count the five-year-olds.
Okay, so of course the data we've had is showing that programs have various outcomes, and we've been working on that for several years, and the Parents as Teachers model or the Head Start model, and some have been effective and some haven't. But you're talking about in the schools as a two-year kindergarten being what you believe for Northwest Arctic would be the appropriate model that would work if they had certified teachers in those classrooms. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, sir. That is it. It makes it simple. We can move forward this way. It doesn't affect facilities in most of these situations across rural Alaska. The program, and what I'm talking about, this type of early childhood model is called intentional learning. There's the New Jersey Center for Early Childhood Education, and it has compiled a national database of research on early childhood education, and this model is the one that provides the most success for children who lack those type of experiences that are necessary to be ready for school when they first enroll.
And thank you, and we will solicit again from the department information on the, because we had two-year kindergarten taking place in some of the rural districts a few years ago, and then that was rolled back so that people couldn't be re-enrolled, and see if we can follow those results through as well. So thank you very much, and it's very good to get a proposal to come forward from you for a specific things that you know would work in your district, and I appreciate that. We have Representative Wilson, then Representative Gardner. Before you go forward, I want to recognize that Representative Munoz has joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Norman, in your opinion, when you say that the two-year kindergarten program has to have intentional learning environments, and in your opinion, would a first-year teacher be able to do this?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Wilson. It's kind of hit and miss with any first-year teacher, but yes, I've seen several first-year teachers that I know personally are wonderful. They're just natural teachers, and they just hit the ground running. And then there's others who have a hard time no matter what their assignment. I don't think early childhood is any more difficult to teach than is calculus in the high school, as long as that's what your calling is for. Some people, you know, for myself, I'd have to say I'd be a failure as a preschool teacher. But, you know, give me some good middle and high school students and then some good teachers who can handle elementary and we'll do well. So, again, I think just people who are great with young kids, they do a great job. I've seen it, and I just have the greatest respect for it.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I have two questions, Dr. Eck. The first is, if the state were to support and fund a two-year kindergarten program across the board in your district, would you have the space available? And secondly, regarding education for 3- and 4-year-olds, Head Start and Parents as Teachers are two examples of preschool programs that are sometimes run through school districts, sometimes freestanding, and there's different ways of organizing them. But unlike a standard kindergarten or a two-year kindergarten program, part of the element that's held in common by Head Start and the Parents as Teachers is sort of an expected or even required family participation. And, of course, the value of that is not only are parents learning about the education of their child and participating, but they also gain benefits that then apply also to subsequent children within that family, and it gets parents involved potentially all the way through their child, or increased involvement all the way through their child's education. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Thank you. Through the chair. Yes, we have the facilities in our schools to offer education to the 4-year-olds. Head Start is very much a socialization program and does do a lot with families. And the parents as teachers, those are great models. And in larger communities, you can have those as alternatives for families who are very involved and concerned with the education of their children. I think that for any early elementary program to be successful, it must have parental involvement as a part of it. And I think that parental training needs to be a part of it, too, that actually we were able to have a wonderful grant. It was funded for 5 years called Getting Ready to Learn here. And we worked with parents just after the birth of their child until the child was 3 years old. It was a pilot project in 5 of our villages to work with those parents to help them understand what kind of learning activities and fun activities can you do with your child from the time it's an infant to a toddler to beginning to speak and then the developmental speech and that, to help them get ready for the learning that they'll be taking on for the rest of their life. It was very successful, but of course, as so often is with pilot programs, when the funding ran out, we couldn't afford to keep it going, and it's just such a shame. We've applied several times for additional funding from the federal government on different grants, but as you know, grants are hit or miss. So parental involvement is a must. I agree. Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. So the grant that you had for 5 years, how old are those children today, and are they still in the elementary schools, and how are they doing compared to their cohorts who were not involved in that grant program?
Thank you. Through the chair, we did have, as the chair mentioned, we did have also 2-year kindergarten for a couple years. Those children are now in the upper elementary grades, and those early child, that program ended 3 years ago. So those children are now just entering school. We have found, you know, that our scores have increased over the last several years. So I think that part of our improvement is not only better instruction and better curriculum, more attention to an aligned curriculum, those things that are necessary, but I also think a part of our growth in our scores is due to those elements of the early childhood programs that we were able to have, but only for such brief periods.
Thank you.
And Mr. Eck or Dr. Eck, you were talking about teachers or additional teachers. Were you meaning that the two-year kindergarten would require an additional teacher in each of the schools, or is that, and is there adequate housing in the villages for an additional teacher, or would this be something that can be accomplished with the existing teachers that are doing the kindergarten?
Thank you. In some of our schools, perhaps not a full-time teacher would be required, but perhaps a quality instructional aide could help because the numbers are smaller. In many of our schools, however, it would require an additional teacher because, like in Kotzebue here, we would need three teachers to handle the number of four-year-olds that would be coming in. In Selawik, we would need another full-time teacher, in Norvik, another full-time teacher, in Buckland. So for us, I would say it probably would require three instructional aides and perhaps eight teachers or so. However, by counting them as full FTEs, just like we count the five-year-olds, that would take care of it. Concerning housing, yes, we could manage the housing requirements of that. It's always important to keep in mind that with districts like us, even though there isn't housing available in many of our communities for teachers to live in, we have to pay for teacher housing out of our regular education dollars. We don't get any additional money for teacher housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions on the early childhood? And Dr. Eck, would this be a voluntary system that you're talking about, or would this be do you think that you'd have, what kind of participation do you think that you would have in two-year kindergarten in your school system? On voluntary basis.
Thank you. Right now, you know, the state law doesn't require children in school until they're 7 years old. However, our six-year-olds who are in first grade and our five-year-olds who are in kindergarten, and then if we had four-year-olds, it would be the same as it would be, the four-year-olds coming the same as the five- and six-year-olds. I would expect attendance to be in the 88% to 92% range. That's based upon our attendance in kindergarten and that.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you think we should change the age of requirement to send your child to school?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Wilson. I think so. I think it's much more important to require it at the early years than it is to take it from 16 to 18, where we have no law enforcement to keep it in place anyhow, and there's no additional footnote in terms of money to change that. But I think to have it at the early years, everything we do at these early years saves us tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars to society later on for the rest of the lifetime and the educational time of that child. You can make up so much more in the beginning than you can when a child's in high school.
Yeah, follow-up, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What age would you suggest?
Well, I guess five. 5 years old.
Thank you.
You know, there are some folks who are doing, but in Alaska, I'm sorry, Alaska does allow parents a lot of choice, and I think that's very positive, because as it is now, many parents choose to homeschool their children. We have no state regulations on that, but if a parent is declaring that they're homeschooling their child, then we accept that. But I would think that five-year-olds should be required to come, but we need to be able to allow these four-year-olds in as well.
Representative Wilson, one
more, and that's all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I used to be a school nurse, and many times I would, with certain kids that I was working with, when they wouldn't show up, I'd go get them. And a lot of times they stayed home just because mom wanted them to be there so that she'd have somebody to talk to and keep her company. Does that happen?
Through the chair. No wonder you have such a nice way about you, Representative Wilson. Now I understand. Yes, it does happen. There's so often too many reasons that are not adequate for children not being in school. Truancy is a problem. We've been having meetings with the Attorney General, with the Commissioner of Education, with the Commissioner of Public Service, several of us superintendents, on how can we streamline being able to do something about truancy. The way the law is set up in the state, it's difficult to approach. Our district attorneys are swamped. We have to prepare all the paperwork, give it to the district attorneys, and it's not high on their priority list because they have so many other things that take up much higher priority. For instance, we took 25 truancy cases to the district attorney before Christmas, and to date we don't have any response on them. And you know, after 10 days the child's not in school, we're supposed to drop them from our rolls. They become a dropout. And this isn't acceptable. We need to have this kind of intervention. In some of our villages, however, it is not necessarily a wise thing to go into their houses to try to get the kids out. In some of our villages, people can do that well, but in other words, they can't. So I thank you for that, but it's very important to have them there. And a lot of times, kids are not in school for what I consider to be very poor reasons.
Okay, thank you. And let's go on to the third point. Before we do, it has been very helpful for us to have the testimony in writing. So if other people that are going to be testifying on this have written testimony, I wanted to give you a fax number, which is 907-465-3472. So if you have written testimony, if you could fax that to us, and then we have that with us, and we can be making notes on that as we go. If you don't, that's fine. We appreciate your testimony anywhere. It just helps us if we have that available. The third point that you had addressed was teaching capacity and the 2-week or to a 4-week pre-service program. And as I'm reading your testimony there, you were talking about something like at the University of Alaska or something, or were you talking about something in your physical district there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With a larger district like ours, for rural Alaska, we could probably provide that ourselves centrally here in Kotzebue. However, we don't have the funding to be able to do it because these people should have their full salary. And we could pull together several of our teachers who could provide an adequate orientation. Plus, we would bring in community members and also our regional corporation members to be able to provide the content that would be necessary. Also, the curriculum side of it is equally important to the socialization side. But I think that if something like this were to be offered, if it could be offered at UAF in Fairbanks or at in Anchorage, either at APU or UAA, that would be great to have it centrally located. Then the resources could be there, and if teachers need daycare, it would be provided. If they needed pet care, it would be provided. But to bring them in and then be able to give them a full day's worth of work for 10 days to 20 days would make a big difference, so they would understand what they're coming into. As it is now with new people coming to the bush, there's a good chance that they're not going to decide that this is for them. They make that decision, through my experience, sometime along January to February, that either they're going to be successful and they're determined to make this work, or this just isn't for them. And so we would have a certain number of people who would wash out. If this was an adequate preparation program, there'd be several who would say, hey, if that's what this is about, this isn't for me. And so if you might have 5% of those through the training or 10% of those who would back out up front, that would be so much better than having them in the classroom and having them not be effective for their students and then allowing those children to have a year of which they're not gaining what they need to gain from their teachers. So it would help in that aspect as well. But it really is something that it's not that expensive, though it is an expense that's too much for the districts to be able to shoulder. But the districts could put that together. They could plan that. They could provide the content, and they could provide the people to do it. So we wouldn't need somebody else to come in to figure out how to do it or what the content would be. We know what that content needs to be. We simply need the ability to be able to do it.
Okay, thank you. And were there any questions on that? The other part of that was the smaller Mount Edgecombe type boarding schools, and we had Representative Book had a question on that. Representative Garter.
Thank you, Dr. Eek. You have a paragraph, and it starts a much overlooked answer, and in the middle of that, you talk about magnet school opportunities. We spent some 50, 60 years trying to comply with a court case, and I'm just wondering if you think there's enough support statewide where we can reconsider that and we can move in a direction where hubs actually would be supported.
Through the chair, thank you for that question. I very much appreciate it. Yes, the time has come, as I say, the time has come for this. Bethel, Northwest Arctic, North Slope, Galena, we all are working to either put in place or are putting in place magnet school type opportunities. For instance, here in our region, when a child goes to school, they're taught by somebody who is not from their village, sometimes by the kind of person they've never seen before. They come from most often the lower 48. But there's no reason why the teachers in our region couldn't be the local folks who've gone through and gotten their teacher certification. They get sick and they go to the clinic, or they go with their mom to the clinic when somebody else is ill. If they see a registered nurse or if they see a doctor, again, that's not from their local community. If you go to Red Dog Mine, there's 400 employees there at the basic mine operations. About 200 of them are local folks, but they're the lower echelon jobs. Same thing on the North Slope. However, the people from the region here can fill those other jobs if they had the opportunities. If we had magnet school type opportunities, we're here, what we're proposing to do, and we have an agreement with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and we have our own Alaska Technical Center, our children could start as juniors in high school, and they could say, I want to be a teacher, and begin taking higher level high school classes and taking some dual credit classes through the University of Alaska, the Chuck Chi campus here. So that way, when they graduate as a senior, they have maybe a number of college credits already and are into the pathway of becoming a teacher and then continuing with that work in the region through the courses, through, like, let's say, Chuck Chi College. By the time they're in the 14th, 15th, or 16th grade, they've got their diploma, they have their teacher certification. And these are the type of jobs that are legacy jobs that will be here and remain here for a lifetime and many lifetimes. There are many types of occupations like that in rural Alaska that people want to latch on to. And I say much of our high dropout rate is because students aren't engaged. They say, look at these people doing those jobs. I can't do those jobs, obviously, because I don't have many examples of it. And so they tune out. And it's that tuning out that causes the disinterest. But if they see that the possibility is right there for them to be engaged in these higher levels of education, they can take that on, they can step up to the challenge, they can be successful, and they can fill those positions. And that's what's needed. And so we're looking at that here in Northwest Arctic very sincerely. I know the North Slope had some formal meetings on that just a month ago. And Representative Jewell and Senator Olson were at those. Galena already has, where they have aviation as a magnet. They also have hairdressing, and they have what do you call the nutrition, hospitality. They have that as their three things. In Bethel, they have a similar thing, I think, with heavy equipment, and I can't remember what the other areas are. So sure. These could be magnet-type opportunities that don't have to be duplicated, but a child from rural Alaska can say, I can go to that. Mount Edgecombe only has 400 beds. That's all they can take.
Thank you.
We need these opportunities for our children, but they have to be provided in a larger type of environment, and that's where these regional magnet-type schools, boarding facilities, people want them.
Okay, and thank you very much. And I do want to just remind the committee we have a list of people from the other places, so we are going to have to expedite, though we do want to get fully through the questions. Representative Gardner, Representative Edmund, did you have a question? No. Okay, Representative
Thank you.
Gardner.
Okay, I think I have a fairly quick question, and I'm the only member of the committee who's attended a boarding school. But when I've talked to rural legislators about boarding schools, some people have expressed concern about the possibility of forcing the closure of existing schools if two or three of the students go to a boarding school and then you drop below a viable number. Is that not a concern?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. I do not advocate closing those schools. Because, like, what I'm talking about, Ambler, for instance, we have a high school there with about 17 or 18 students in it. We have four students from there, in addition, that go to Mount Edgecombe. So if we had a magnet school type opportunity here, maybe there would be a couple that would go to it. We need to still keep those opportunities there in the villages, and we can continue to provide that with one or two high school teachers as we do now. In Northwest Arctic, we have 10 high schools. Three of them have one high school teacher. Another three have two high school teachers. But with the improvement in distance delivery, the improvement of the infrastructure, that things that are going to be coming online, we can provide for a good basic general education for those students. Let me say, which is remarkable to see, this is when you look at data, this is when you get enlightened. And for me, I got a period of enlightenment here, an opportunity for enlightenment. I looked at three of our schools that have our three schools that have our highest attendance rate, and our three of our schools that made AYP, and they're with one or two high school teachers. And so those small schools are connecting with those children, and they made adequate yearly progress. And they had over 90% attendance. So you can have success in those small situations, but for some students, they need to have the larger opportunities.
And thank you. Excuse me for just a second. We have seven or eight other areas that are. Can you submit those questions? Dr. Eck, we have. We've been through about half our time this morning, and so we're going to run out, and I don't want to deny the other districts that we've invited to testify, time. Representative Wilson had a number of questions that she was. Could she send those to you and ask you to get back to her in writing?
Absolutely. I would be honored to do that. I would invite that for anyone who would like to do that. I would be honored to do that. My assistant superintendent and I could provide those answers and get those to you on Monday.
That would be great. We have your contact information. That there is a desire to go more deeply into some of these subjects so that we have a full understanding, but I just don't want to deny all of the other folks' ability to have enough time to testify. So I appreciate that. Are there other questions that need to be? We didn't get over your fourth point, but we have that as far as targeted assistance, and we have it in writing, and so what I'm going to do is ask the committee to submit those if there's questions on that point as well. And then if you will get that, if you get questions and you're responding with answers to an individual legislator, if you would please also send them to me as a committee chair, I will make sure that the entire committee gets those as well so that we all have the same base knowledge going forward. So thank you very much. Sorry for mispronouncing your name there at the beginning, and we really appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you, and it's been an honor. Thank you so much.
On the sign-up sheet, next was Roger Sampson. Roger, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and Roger, were you here to testify on this or on the program, the performance incentive program?
Mr. Chairman, I was asked to be involved in the discussion regarding the Moore case and looking for some resolution and effective strategies in moving forward.
Okay, go ahead and proceed with your testimony. We appreciate that, and I presume that everybody was online, and what we're looking for is effective suggestions for improvement of education. And so would you identify yourself on the record, who you represent for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Roger Sampson. I'm currently the president of the Education Commission of the States, former commissioner of education for the state of Alaska. I had an opportunity to read the most recent court order by Judge Gleason regarding the five districts that are in improvement status under No Child Left Behind. I was directly involved with the implementation of the beginning of this model. I appreciate the legislature's position in looking for some resolution. That is represented by the superintendents and the boards of these five districts, and certainly the Department of Education. I've been distanced from it, but yet I've kept a thumb on it because my heart still lies in Alaska and the tremendous work that's going on there. I think that there's a story to be told that will be done in a few weeks with this year's assessment results. I understand the assessments are being given this week and next, and results are 3 to 6 weeks away. I know that Les Morris and Commissioner Ledoux have made significant improvements and outlining specific targeted strategies, both in professional developments and actual delivery and support of teachers and administrators to enhance the impact in getting student results. As I read the judge's orders, I know that the legislature provided for the department to intervene at a much deeper level as we pass regulation for No Child Left Behind. The order clearly is putting the legislature and the Department of Education in a position for very, very deep intervention. In fact, to the point of removing local control. Should the direction be to do that, it's obviously going to be very uncomfortable for the department, the legislature, and the local school district. She speaks deeply about aligned curriculum, and if that alignment hasn't occurred, the state needing to take the responsibility for providing that, either the alignment or the exact curriculum. She speaks specifically into making sure those teachers have the right professional development, and that districts may not have the capacity to do that. And she deeper explores that they may not have the qualifications and the skills necessary as beginning teachers to be effective, which gets directly into hiring policy and potentially the evaluation of their performance. I would suggest that in moving forward, two things happen. One, review the results from this testing year first so that you can be very targeted on what it's going to take to address that. And not a big picture look, but a very targeted look at the results and identify where those results can be enhanced. Is that through scheduling? Is it through direct intervention with teacher professional development? Is it an implementation of aligned formative assessment? Secondly, I know there's been great conversation around a pre-K program or early learning program. I was an advocate for that in Alaska as the commissioner. I remain an advocate for early learning, but with my work at ECS around all 50 states, we've been doing extensive research around the impact of early learning. And what we're finding is it is taking disadvantaged children pre-K and moving them to proficient or average levels by kindergarten. But there has been a clear result around the country, and I'm speaking about high-quality early learning programs, where there's a phenomena called fade-out that's happening. And what this basically means is you're taking students who are not proficient at kindergarten to begin their learning. Through early learning programs, they are moved to a proficient level, ability to start where other normal and proficient kids are starting. Yet they lose that advantage by the time they hit third grade. And this is happening across all subgroups of students in all locations around the country. Based on that research, just to do an early learning program for 1 or 2 years will ultimately probably not get those kids to where they need to continually be successful. So many states and many schools have begun a strategy that's called a P3 strategy, meaning that you have to not only do it early, you need to carry it at least through grade 3 if you want to maintain those improvements of proficiency around literacy that you've been able to move those students to and not have the disadvantage of the fade-out impact. So as the legislature explores the possibility of doing early learning programs, I would encourage you to look at how those early learning programs must be tied beyond pre and K, and how those curriculums, and Superintendent Eck did a terrific job when he talked about aligning and targeted early learning. They must indeed be targeted around the standards and the adopted curriculum that leads kindergarten, first, second, third grade right on through. I'd be happy to ask specific questions. I have very strong feelings on what the judge's orders actually mean. And the reason that we have, both when I was the commissioner and I know what Commissioner Ledoux and Morris have tried to focus on, is doing everything they can to build the partnership with those districts as opposed to go in and do a takeover. Those would be incredibly uncomfortable. But some of the areas the judge has identified, it's almost forcing the legislature to do that unless we can build an incredibly strong partnership with the superintendents, the teachers, and the boards of those districts.
Well, thank you on that. And, you know, our worry here is that we also look at the results of takeovers, and although it has been seems to have been a common idea that if you take over a school and do it, it will vastly improve. The data that we're seeing does not show in the majority of those cases that is an effective strategy as well. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're not implementing a strategy, you know, trying something unless that, you know, has proven results around across the spectrum of issues that we would be talking about. So we're concerned about that as well. And if you have some specific things, I did I think you probably got my fax number, but it is 465-2689. If you have written testimony and if you have any particular information on P3 strategy, we would appreciate getting those links as well. And Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Roger, in your kind of overview of the whole United States right now, when you say that we have to follow through clear up to third grade, I'm thinking back of what's happened because of funding, and we used to have teacher aides in every single classroom to help those teachers. Now, is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about something more than that?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm not talking about aides going all the way through third grade necessarily. I'm talking about that the early learning program, there must be open and intentional design and dialogue that's ongoing between the pre-K instruction, the kindergarten instruction, the first, second, third grade instruction, so that there are, if you will, safety nets and an ongoing target moving through the curriculum with grade level expectations. And the programs that are having the most success, they're doing ongoing formative assessment. This is not stressful type of assessment that so many young people and teachers oppose. This is the type of feedback that lets a teacher know not 2 months from now, but at the end of the instruction today, tomorrow, and next week, did the student get it? Are they able to apply it? And if not, I need to go back and reteach that and maybe look at a different way to present those materials.
Thank you.
I guess I need to follow up. You know, I only taught for 3 years, and that was in junior high school and high school, but isn't that what teachers should be doing in their classroom instruction currently?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, you're correct. Unfortunately, that is not the norm in many classrooms. It's not happening on an ongoing basis, and when it is, it isn't necessarily instruction. It might be wonderful instruction, but is oftentimes not instruction that aligns with the standards or the curriculum that's aligned to what students will be asked and to demonstrate their knowledge of. This is where you get into the need for terrific principals and superintendents to see that that environment is created in those schools, and in fact, the teachers are teaching the curriculums and the lessons that are aligned to the standards.
Well, thank you. And if you do have some specific, research based on some of those programs, we would appreciate getting those. Representative Book has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate all your former efforts and your current ongoing, and also your interest in the state. I understand where you're coming from on many of these issues. I would specifically like to hear your comments on how we, as somebody with the financial oversight, can appropriate the funding for some of these additional opportunities regarding early education, the facilities, the teachers, and also your comments on whether or not we could get state support for going to the rural hub type of education that has been mentioned earlier today. So these are rhetorical questions, and I would like to see your answers in writing if you have the time and the energy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Thank you very much, and we will be anxious to, get that information from you. Let's go to William Woodford. Mr. Woodford, are you online?
Yes, I am. Can you you hear me?
Yes, we can. Mr. Woodford, would you identify yourself on the record and who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, I will, Chair Seaton. My name is William Woodford. I am currently the superintendent for the Yukon Flats School District in Fort Yukon, Alaska. I have 30 years experience as an educator, 20 of those years as a building principal, 10 of those years as a building principal, 10 of those years as a superintendent, 1 year as a district office person. That was last year in the area of curriculum and development for the Yukon Flats School District. And then this is my first year as a superintendent for the Yukon Flats School District.
Thank you very much. You know what we're trying to do here is get suggestions for the ways forward to see how programs can be more effectively proceeded with. There's been a number that have been going forward, such as the teacher mentoring, the principal mentoring. Of course, I'm sure you're aware that we have some curriculum specialists that that have been included in the budget. But if you have suggestions for us of how the interventions that we're that the state is attempting, how those could be more effective, if some of them, if there's additional things that you see that could be done, we'd appreciate hearing about those.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. What I would like to do is be very brief. You have all seen now the Moore case decision, and I know that litigation is ongoing. I am relatively new to Alaska education, and in some ways I think that may prepare me to speak to some of the issues that we face in the Yukon Flats School District that pertain to the Moore case. The first is teacher preparation. There are three points that I would like to emphasize and speak to. The first would be teacher preparation. The second would be curriculum alignment. And the third would be retention of highly qualified teachers. And again, I will be brief. In the area of teacher preparation programs, I applaud the state's effort. They do a very good job in connecting our young teachers and our first-year teachers and administrators and second-year administrators in mentoring programs. I think that's essential for having for preparing our teachers for the unique teaching opportunities in Bush, Alaska. I applaud those efforts, and again, I encourage you to continue with those. The other thing, the thing that I would like to see that I believe that would make this a stronger effort is more time with mentor teachers in the trenches working with those new teachers, especially those new teachers that are not only coming potentially from outside of Alaska, but also those that are new to the education profession. If there were more time that they could work in a partnership in the classroom, in the unique settings that we have in many of our villages, I think that would be very helpful and beneficial. More of an internship type program. With regard to internship programs, I would also like to see more effort and help in training and working with members and residents of our communities to teach them to become educators. It's difficult when we go out on the recruiting trail to explain to new recruits what they're going to be anticipating when they come to the villages. We do the best that we can. We talk to them about, in our case, working with our Athabascan natives. We talk about living in isolated Alaska, which much like Dr. X's Northwest Arctic burrow, many of our sites are not accessible and are not on the roaded system. They're only accessible by air. We try to talk to them about the things they'll experience, such as the low amount of sunlight and the long Alaska winters and temperatures that go down regularly to minus 40 and 50 degrees. And after we get done with the deer in the headlights look, they tell us that, oh yes, we've been in wind chills of maybe minus 10 to 20 for a week. We have to prepare them for very long winters, but if there are ways that we can work with folks that live in interior Alaska and prepare them for to be teachers, I think that might be very helpful. And additional loan forgiveness to help young individuals who go to the expense of becoming teachers and then come out with the huge burdens of school loans and working in a profession that in some ways is the compensations don't match up directly with the cost of the loans that they incur to become teachers, and especially it's kind of doubly compounded with the cost of living in interior Alaska. And then the other point I would like to speak to is curriculum alignment. Having had experience in working to try to develop curriculum for the Yukon Flats School District, and the amount of time and effort that takes with a skeletal staff in our particular district, we have three administrators in our central office. We wear many hats. Our tasks are diversely divided to try to accomplish everything from the writing of grants to the application for our federal program funding to developing policy and procedure for the operation of our districts, the supervision of our staff in the eight sites that we currently have. So we have a wide variety of responsibilities in addition to trying to develop curriculum. I believe that it could be a more streamlined approach in the development of a curriculum that is already very well done, again, with the efforts that have already taken place with the Alaska GLEs, but additional help from the state in the form of development of curriculum that is tied to the GLEs, not the assistance of districts to do that task, because we simply do not have the manpower on the ground in our district offices, but rather to have the help of the state in developing the curriculum itself, so that we can in-service our teachers, veteran teachers as well as new teachers, in what is expected in each of those grade levels for their success on the standards-based assessment. And there was a good effort begun by that a year ago, and I participated in the Curriculum Alignment Institutes in developing a format so that much of that work could be done, and then we got down to specific things like classroom instructional activities that could be developed by the instructors with the help of building administrators, and designing pacing to meet the needs of individual students. So I think much more effort, much more assistance from the state in development of curriculum is required, and not just saying we'd like to have additional on-site technical assistance coaches that can help make sure that we're pointed in the right direction when they leave on the airplane, and then the workload still falls on our shoulders. And lastly, I would like to speak to the need for retention of highly qualified teachers. We go out and we do an excellent job of recruiting new teachers, again, some of which really don't have an understanding of what it will be like when they get to Bush, Alaska. We try to do the very best that we can in trying to set the stage for them. But when they arrive here and they have inadequate housing, as many of our villages do, and in the form of they rent a cabin here, for instance, for between $600 and $800 a month, one that is not suitable for living during temperatures in January and February that drop to 40 below and stay there for 3 to 4 weeks at a time, when the cost of heating fuel has, and I personally have paid as high as $7.30 a gallon for heating fuel, and even a cord of wood in the village will run you between $200 and $220 a cord, cut in lengths and delivered, not cut in rounds, not stacked, not split, which again we asked our young educators, when they finish, we ask them to arrive at work in the morning by 8 o'clock to prepare for classroom instruction. We ask them to teach all day long until 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a regular day, and then we ask them to stay behind to assist kids that are not instructionally up to speed in a given concept. And, oh, by the way, in the later on in the evening, we're going to have a community activity in which we expect you to be there, show up, become a member of the community, and then when you get home in the evening around 7 or 8 o'clock, you'll have to pack wood. So I hope you can split enough on the weekends to make that effort a little less. And lastly, the high cost of living in the village and trying to teach our new teachers, and remind them that milk here at the AC store in Fort Yukon will cost you more than $13 a gallon. And if you want to splurge on a half a gallon of ice cream, be prepared to pay in excess of $12 for a half gallon of Blue Bunny ice cream.
Thank you. And I guess, you know, there's a little bit of tension here between, you know, the problem with housing and retention of teachers, and then I guess what I'm the mentoring program, the suggestion is that they should be there for longer durations. You know, I've talked to some of the mentors that have felt that you know, they've been successful, they've you know, participating, they think that there's improvement, but they're sleeping on the floor of the schoolhouse for three nights. So how do you suggest that the mentoring program work into a longer duration stay in the village if this is the housing situation that we have, or are they I mean, do we have a problem here of it would be nice if there was a longer term teaching situation, but they're either going to have to double up with the teacher or teacher's family, or sleep in the school? Is that the option that we have, or what's the solution there?
Thank you for the question, Senator or Representative Seaton. Currently, that is exactly the situation that we have, and we have desperate need for better housing. If we could get help in our case with a housing complex, and I know that this is also a similar need from some of the other intervention districts. I believe the Upiat district also struggles with housing. If we could get help in constructing fourplex, eightplex, that we could house some of our teachers, and that we could house some of our mentor teachers when they come to visit, that would be very, very helpful and very beneficial.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question, Mr. Woodford, I have heard where they have built teacher housing, and then the people in the community are upset because the teachers are living in a much nicer place than they have. And some of them had flush toilets and electricity when they didn't. What would be the situation there?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I believe that there might be some issues with that. But I also believe that if we can raise the standard of living in some of our areas and provide for our educators, we can retain quality, highly qualified teachers that will make a long-term commitment. And we backslide. And again, as I said at the very outset, I'm part and parcel of that turnover. I've heard stories that we've had as many as two superintendents in a given year, and over the past several years, our superintendents have stayed for about 2 years, and that's very similar with many of our highly qualified teachers. They don't stay very long because again, we ask so much of them in being involved with children's education, with being involved with the community, and then we don't provide them suitable housing. So there may be some of that, but I do believe it's our responsibility to provide the best housing that we can for our educators so that we can retain them and ultimately do a better job of educating the children that we're charged with providing quality education for.
Thank you.
And I guess I'd just like to ask a question. I don't know how it is. I haven't seen numbers for Yukon Flats, but when we were looking at the state of as a whole, you know, of course there's a base student allocation and a geographic cost differential applied to that. So there's quite a difference there. But when we look at teacher salaries across the state, we even find some rural Alaska places that are paying much less for their teachers than urban Alaska. We're not telling people how to run their business, but when the question is, you know, that we're requiring all of this extra work for some teachers in rural Alaska, and rural Alaska is not allocating their resources to you know, to even compensating for the cost differential of the cost of living. How does that square, and does that come into the local, just the local choices that are made, or how do we address that?
My 2010 2011 base salary will be $41,581. It is not uncommon for a small 800 square foot residence to cost on the average of $1,000 a month for $1,000 to $1,100 a month for living. In addition to that, even if our staff shops in Fairbanks and has their groceries sent by U.S. mail or shipped out via one of the air carriers, they're still going to pay a minimum of 25% more. So I believe that that there is a high cost of living here, and it impacts our youngest and newest teachers probably harder than any of our other staff members.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, one of the reasons for people leaving rural Alaska is the higher cost, but I believe the base salaries in Fairbanks and Anchorage are in the 42 or 43 range. In other words, the base salaries in Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks are higher in some cases by not quite $10,000, but by $6,000 or $7,000 than the base salary for rural Alaska. How is it that we can anticipate keeping teachers in a higher cost environment if we're actually have a base salary for them that is less than urban Alaska?
Thank you for the question. I think what you find with those individuals that seek out teaching experiences in Bush, Alaska, they come here not just for the money. They come here for the experience and because they choose in many instances the lifestyle. But where I think we could be, again, we could better serve our young teachers is if we had quality housing that they could come home to at the end of the day. I really believe that would help offset some of the some of the differences in salary, because again, we ask an awful lot of our staff and we work them very hard. At the end of the day, they're pretty tired.
Okay.
And to be able to come home to a comfortable, warm warm home is not a luxury. It's a need.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Well, thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Let's go to Yupik School District. We have three people online there: Howard Diamond, Diane George, and Willie Casile. Are you online?
Yes, we are online.
Okay, and since there's three of you, if a different person speaks, would you please just say your name after your original introduction each time a person speaks, so our recording secretary can make sure that we know who we're talking to each time in the record. So would you go ahead and introduce yourself onto the record and who you represent? Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Howard Diamond. I'm the superintendent with the Yupik School District. And for the record, I've worked in rural Alaska for about 30 years. Back in the late 70s, I was a principal teacher in the Tulik community of Tuliksac, and then spent about 8 years there, and have since had the opportunity of spending about 10 years in Interior Alaska working for the Iditarod School District, and then as a superintendent working in the districts of Hoonah and Yakutat in the southeast. So I've had, and then this past July, accepted a position back here in the Yupik School District working with the communities of Akichuk, Akiak, and Tuliksac. So it's been a homecoming for me, and I've really enjoyed the challenge. What I'd like to talk about is a concern that has not been brought up, and then I'd like to mention some things that and expound on what Ms. Superintendent Woodford had to say. One of the concerns that I see is a high dropout rate, a lack of interest in school, and a low child investment and parent investment in our schools. We need to help our students feel relevance of school in their current and future lives. If they feel no value in what is taught, the best research-based reading and math programs will not work. Yes, they may gain skills for a time, and they may be able to pass tests at a higher level, but they feel no inherent value in what is taught, they will lose interest and drop out. Students need to connect to the curriculum, the learning standards. They need to feel the standards are relevant and meaningful to their current and future lives. Students need to connect to themselves, to their skills and desires. Students need to connect their skills and desires to a future career goal and connect to that goal to the learning standards and curriculum. And if we do not offer in our curriculum what they need to reach their career dreams, we need not offer it. For example, technical reading skills, technology skills, vocational skills. If students have a burning desire to be a welder, a pilot, a doctor, heavy equipment operator, or an engineer, they will see math, reading, or science skills as vital to attaining those dreams. They will be driven to learn and will not have to be forced or coerced to come to school. What I believe will be an important advancement in our district and in a lot of small districts is that if we can have a broad and well-defined career technical education program and complement that with the TUGATS program. I remember had a program called the Anchorage House. The Anchorage House had curriculum. They provided experience, job shadowing, internships, career awareness, employability skills. So kids had an opportunity to go to an urban area and start adjusting to a life that if they go beyond the high school and go into career education or to a university, they'll know what to expect. I believe that's well needed. I'd like to talk really from my heart. My son is Yupik, and he is a junior in Akyachuk. And if you want to know how to evaluate a school, your son at the dinner table or your daughter are as good evaluators as superintendents. And I've seen him go from small school and small districts around the state as he followed his dad and mom. And when we came here, it was evident a couple of things that were lacking. We have programs here and that we are working with our students in reading, writing, and math. And he will tell me, he said, Dad, what else is there? I'm bored. There's nothing else to do. There's no music here. There's no art instruction. There are no activities that really make kids want to come to school. And I would tell him that, well, we don't have the capacity. Well, I would say it in other terms, that we don't have the capacity to hire those folks. As Superintendent Woodford said, we may have ways and opportunities for positions, but we are asking our new teachers to come to rural Alaska without a road system, isolated, a different climate, a different culture, and ask teachers to come into a housing situation. And if you can think of, and it could be somebody that's older, to live with younger people. We just say, well, you're going to have to double up in housing, or in some cases, triple up in housing. And then we put demands on new teachers. We have itinerants coming in for various reasons. And we have experienced in the last 5 years a turnover rate, and I will follow this up with a written report to your committee. We have a turnover rate in our district that has more than doubled in the last 5 years. We are trying to do exit interviews with those teachers that are leaving to find out exactly why they're leaving. But I believe from working here 30 years ago to now, the amount of stress on our new teachers and the amount of work that they need to do in our communities is really too challenging for them. They need time to adjust to their culture, adjust to their community, and we're finding we need to recruit highly qualified teachers, and we need to figure out a way to keep them here. And I believe one of the main ways that 30 years ago I continued to stay and my family continued to stay was adequate housing. The housing that was provided to me 30 years ago was far superior to what is available now. I came up through the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the housing was attached to the school, but it was housing that was of a high quality. And we were not having to share housing. We talked about a need for a broad and well, we talked about a concern for kids starting school behind and having to catch up for the rest of their K-12 experience. Kids who start out behind begin feeling incompetent. It's harder to catch up. They need one or more years of growth for 1 year in school. If students are behind 1 year by third grade, the research says that they'll never catch up, resulting in dropout and failing. So we do need, and I agree with some of the speakers, we do need preschool experience taught by highly certificated staff with ongoing training that emphasizes solid language instruction and a connection to their own culture and identity. I'd like to stop there and to turn it over to Diane George, our assistant superintendent.
Okay, thank you. And Diane, would you go ahead and introduce yourself onto the record, then go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Diane George. I'm the assistant superintendent with the UP School District. I have, similar to Howard, I began working in Acciachuck in 1980 with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. I have lived in Acciachuck for 30 years, raised my children here, and they attended the UP School District and both graduated from high school here. So I think I have a perspective here not only as an educator and as an administrator, but as a parent and a community member. And both Superintendent Eck, Superintendent Woodford, and Superintendent Diamond have all brought up many important considerations. And one of the things that I would like to bring up that I don't think has been touched on in great detail is some of the efforts that have been put in place in the last couple of years, especially here in the UP School District, to help us to make adequate yearly progress. In particular, the technical assistance efforts that have taken place after this year in particular, but over the last few years. I think that it's important to recognize that these efforts have the people that have come into our district have come in, are highly qualified in their areas, have come in with good intentions, and for the most part have been well received, I believe, by the staff that they're working with. One of the things that I have felt all along, and I believe I said this a while back, is that we can't do this on our own, especially in a small school district. Assistance and support, the support that we can provide from the district office to our teachers is very limited because we have such small district office staff. But what we do need is not itinerants that come in for a few days every month, but we need people who are here in our communities working closely with our teachers on a regular basis. I believe Dr. Eck mentioned Mountain View in the Anchorage School District. Being able to have a full-time school psychologist, a full-time speech pathologist in our district, as well as administrative support for overseeing of our efforts to improve the quality of education in our schools is of utmost importance. Having that continuity in our schools, those individuals working closely with our teachers in the classroom, is extremely important to the teachers. There are so many things that we need to do in a school district on a daily basis that we're not always able to provide the support to the teachers that we should be here to be able to provide in the area of instruction. And I think that the expertise that's needed needs to, we need greater expertise and we need people here in the district, which then it's kind of like a dominoes effect, because then it leads into the issues that have been brought up by other people, such as housing. We talk about ways to bolster support in personnel, and then we come up against, where are we going to put them? We don't have housing available. Our recruitment efforts are very often dictated by our housing. We may interview somebody that we feel would be a wonderful fit for our school, and then we look at our housing and realize that we can't hire that person. So there's so many different, it's such a complex problem, and I think one of the things that is extremely important is that we have the opportunity to work collaboratively with the Department of Education in trying to solve the problem, that we sit down because we are here and we have thoughts and ideas. We need the support to help implement those thoughts and ideas so that we can best meet the needs of our students. And I'm going to stop right there. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. And was there Willie Casale there to testify as well?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Willie Casale, and I'm the chairman of the board for the UP School District Board of Education. I've been on the school board for the last 20 years, 15 of those years as the chairman. I concur with the comments made by the rural school districts that we have a challenge that we need to meet with the partnership of the state. We have six school districts out here in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta area, and our school district was formed about 25 years ago to have local control of education in forming a direction to our staff to educate our children in our three communities. We have had an ongoing challenge over these years, and many of those concerns were addressed by the rural school districts, superintendents, and we continue to face many of the challenges that we have. My comments will be very brief. I think what we're talking about here in education is the future of the state of Alaska, and the future is our children. No matter where they live, I think we will continue to have these challenges, but I think as far as meeting the goals, many of those things have been addressed, such as teacher housing, parental involvement, aligning our curriculum, and the challenge that we have is having the teachers come into our community to remain with us. We're very fortunate with our assistant superintendent Diane George, as well as the superintendent that we have for this year, for coming back to work with us. And I think that the success that we will see in the future will be that we need to have more teachers remain in our communities. And that's the extent of the comments that I will make at this point.
Thank you. For anyone there, I guess there's a couple of issues that have come up. One was on housing that under the previous, the BIA model was attached to the schools. In the smaller schools, is that something that you are, is that something that's supported in the community, or was that comment, would that comment be supported in your communities as well as a way to try to get that, or do you think that that would, as Representative Wilson was talking about, kind of separate the teacher more from the community and have a negative reaction that way?
In our communities,
And who is this speaking?
The sheer number of staff that we have, I don't think we can have a housing attached, but our housing is close by. But what we do need is some type of refiguring on our housing to maybe have, like it was suggested, fourplex or sixplexes that are modern. Our housing is, some of our housing is very basic, and I know that this year we don't have internet service in our housing. We don't have television in many of our housing. So we have these new people coming up here, putting these incredible demands during their 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock work day. But I've told teachers this many times, that in order to be successful in rural Alaska, you have to be successful between 8 to 4, but you also have to be successful between 4 and midnight. And if you can somehow grasp those two areas, I think the chances of staying in a community and being able to be a meaningful part of the community is possible. But if you're coming back after school to a basic residence that does not have those that infrastructure that you're normally accustomed to, you're facing, a lot of teachers then are just after a while are saying enough. I'm looking for something better. And that's what we're seeing. And I think this is going to take an effort of a collective effort to come together and to really, really work on ideas that could improve housing, not just for our district, but in many rural areas.
Thank you. And was this Howard or Willie?
It's Howard Diamond. I'm sorry, Superintendent. Okay.
Thank you. And Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Would three of you be, I have about 25 questions that I've written down. It's just too much to ask in a setting like this when our time is so short. And I neglected to ask Mr. Woodford if he would also, because if I sent you questions, would you try to answer them and send them back?
Yeah, it would be our honor to do that, Representative Wilson. We'd be glad to do that. And we will be sending, we would be glad to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now let's go to Lower Yukon School District. John Lamont. I think we have John Lamont, Alex Russian, Brian Kroschel, and Dave Sharstrom there. And sorry if I'm messing up people's names. And we really appreciate you being online. We're sorry we've taken so much of our time on in-depth testimony with other districts. We would like to go ahead and get your testimony as well, and not just repeating what others, but reinforcing any particular points that other people have made would be helpful, and any additional things that are specific to Lower Yukon School District would be helpful. Do we have
good morning?
Good morning. Would you identify yourself on the record?
Good morning, representatives, Chairman Seaton, Education Committee members. My name is John Lamont. I've been superintendent. This is my fifth year as superintendent for the Lower Yukon School District. Born and raised in the district, I have with me three additional members that you had correctly identified. I want to reinforce what the previous superintendent, Superintendent Woodford, Superintendent Dr. Eck, Superintendent Howard Diamond, Assistant Superintendent Diane George, and their chairman had stated. Those were all issues that we deal with here in rural Alaska. My first comment or question would be the Moore versus State case related to the adequacy of education throughout the state. I'm not sure if this is just dealing, this committee meeting is dealing strictly with districts and their intervention and how that is, how it is or isn't related to the Moore versus State lawsuit. And last item being, we will, you know, since we, you know, you stated we are limited for time, we will follow through with a written out document. I do not have written testimony currently with me, but with my experience living and being raised here in our district, I have about an hour and a half worth of comments to make to this committee regarding education, regarding curriculum, regarding retention of good educators. But if I may, Chairman Seaton, if I can spend a few minutes going over some of my own observations of our education in rural Alaska, would I be able to have that time? I know it is after 10 o'clock now.
Yes, that would be very appreciated, and your written analysis would be very appreciated as well. And we are not trying to, just to clarify, we're not trying to solve the Moore versus Alaska case. What we're trying to do is, you know, obviously the judge said it's the responsibility of the legislature for education in Alaska, and we have kind of allocated that through the Department of Education and through local districts, but those are not where the buck stops. It stops with the legislature, and so we could be looking at interesting things. A special master has been proposed, which would take away, I think, all local control as well as most control through the from the Department of Education. We are looking at trying to exercise our responsibility and make sure that we understand the effects of the interventions that we have authorized and have funded, and find out if those are being conducted in the most effective way, and if there are other suggestions for ways of addressing this. So we are not specifically addressing the lawsuit. What we're doing is looking at the effectiveness of the interventions so that we can get higher levels of education for students, not only in those five districts, but all across Alaska. So I just wanted to clarify that. So that's what our hearing is. So would you go ahead, John? We would really appreciate your personal testimony as well as your written testimony later. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Seaton and Education Committee members. First off, I really appreciate what the state has done. I've been here 5 years, what the state has done, and being able to come in and provide us with additional resources that we need. All the previous superintendents that did state that we need more of that. We definitely need local, we need people locally stationed. So what I took off, you know, through my board was I was able to add a couple of positions, a curriculum position to work with teachers, travel around to our 11 different sites and work with teachers and helping them implement math and language arts and continue to guide and provide professional development. We really need to put early learning back into education. We need to put creativity back into education. We need our focus the last, since 91, I believe it was, the last about 19 years or so, has been on test scores and test results. And if we don't actually really put our money and our efforts and our critical knowledge into pre-birth through 9, 10 years old, you know, we're going to continue to face children who are one, two, 3 years behind in education anywhere, whether it's rural Alaska, rural America. What's important, though, I guess, is making sure that we, quick fix is making sure that we provide quality people in each of our schools, quality people not only when it comes to curriculum and knowledge, but when it comes to people skills and caring, whether to simplify that comment, if we hire an educational leader, an instructional leader, or principal or site administrator who not only has the knowledge and ability of understanding policy and curriculum and people, but also have the belief and the implicit knowledge and caring empathy for people, for teachers, and making sure that that is portrayed to their staff, to their parents, to their students as they come into the building. With a leader in that category, being able to have a say in hiring his or her staff and making sure that those same traits are in those individuals that are hired, highly qualified teachers with good people skills that really, really understand education and people and kids. And when the kids come into the classroom, make learning fun, being lovingly strict, those kids will want to come back to the classroom each and every day. They'll want to come back, and when they're back, they'll be learning. Test scores should and will, one of the factors, be able to take care of themselves, providing that there's quality instruction going on. And with a quality leader, that quality instruction should be going on with parental involvement, with those parents who over the years have been afraid to be connected to the school. Show their kids success and show the parents success. We as educators need to do that. And there is so much that we can do. Dr. Eck touched on some of the other issues that are on the outside that, you know, we have no say and control over. But if we provide that warm environment, we provide that successful environment for our children and for our parents and for our community members through our teaching staff, through our classified staff, you know, things will happen. We will make our kids will be more in tune to being there at school. The number two, there's two major issues. One is attendance, and two is behavior in majority of our schools, not only in the lower Yukon, but throughout the state. And I don't want to dwell on some of the other issues that have been talked about in depth, the housing, you know, providing our teachers with adequate housing and they feel comfortable doing what they do and they maintain, and that's part of our retention process, and also subsidizing that housing or salaries. But my focus, I really want you all to know that, you know, with the overall generic belief that each cycle of education can do better, and we can do better and better for each of our generations, whether it's rural Alaska with hiring all local teachers or training local teachers or outside, even with outside teachers coming in, but being able to make sure that there's ownership of that education, starting with the parents before they have their children, and doing a lot of the preventive measures when it comes to providing a different framework for learning. Our children are very intelligent. They don't necessarily may know how to read from top to bottom, left to right, and analytically analyze what they've read. You can bring them out to the country and you can model. They're conditional learners, as you all know, and through research, you know. They learn so much easier when they do something and they fail at it and they do it again and they do well. They've seen it. We've, you know, our education system, as you all also know, has been passed through ages, through history, you know, through oral stories. We need to put that creativity back in. And each individual school, not a big master district or, but having that control locally at each individual school is so critical to the needs of success for each community. There's a, you know, there were some very good ideas brought up several years ago. I brought up an idea for our area by having a regional boarding school for each individual area and controlling all those variables that we're saying parents aren't controlling at home. And to fix that, I don't think a regional boarding school would fix a lot of the testing, you know, the scores of children or the achievement of children, and we'd be able to control the variables. But we need our communities involved. We need our communities to be able to know what schooling is about and what are the critical issues of schooling, what curriculum, what other extracurricular activities that we really need to focus on, whether, you know, it, for too many years, you know, it's been basketball. You know, everyone's made big thing of basketball in our villages. If we take some of those physical activities away and make sure those are developed in the community, within the community, and really focus in on learning, focus in on our content, why we or our children need to be able to develop and be successful members of their community or the state or the nation as a whole. There's so much more, and I don't want to take too much of the group here. I have an excellent district improvement team, the three members I have here with me. I want to make sure that each of them have something to add to this. But Mr. Chairman, we will put this down in writing. We will provide you a report with our comments, and I know I've kind of jumped around there, but I want you all to realize that, you know, being born out here and living out here and, you know, getting involved in a different, I wasn't actually in education, but I seen the need for it. Rather than fighting it, I joined it to see if I can make a difference, not just with one child at a time, but with over 2,000 children at a time. And I think what we're doing, what we've been doing, what our improvement team has been doing, our district, our communities, we're not perfect, and we still need to continue to communicate. We have an excellent Department of Education coach, Ms. Sipe, who's been working with us and has done an excellent job, and I hope to keep her as a district improvement coach to continue our work together with the State Department of Education. Commissioner Ledoux has done an excellent job in communicating. He's visited our district. This is the first time we've had a commissioner come out and visit a couple of our sites in the lower Yukon. And there are things, structured items that we can do to help improve and provide a better learning environment for our residents here in rural Alaska, specifically in the lower Yukon School District. We do not have a hub like Kotzebue or Barrow or Bethel, but we, you know, we are our own, and for a long time we've just been under the shadow of the spotlight. So I really appreciate you and the committee being able to offer us to testify, and even though I didn't have the time to send in written testimony regarding this meeting this morning. But if there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to receive them through email and respond to them from any and all the committee members, and I'm sure my whole team here would be able or is willing to also respond to those questions that Representative Wilson and Representative the other committee members that you have available to ask those questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this time.
Thank you, John. And just, you know, I made a statement about the special master, and I've been passed a note that, you know, the plaintiffs had required a special master to oversee the department, not the school districts. However, you know how these things go. There's no definition of how we're going to have to exercise our responsibility. I did hear something that was a little different in your testimony there, and one of the things that had come up in the case is, other than reading, writing, and math, the other curriculum points, whether that's music or art or all those other curriculum standards. And I was kind of hearing you say that the school should narrow its focus, you know, and not have the the basketball PE kind of thing, and concentrate more on those core academics. Did I misunderstand that, or was that your testimony that the district should narrow its focus? Because I heard from the other districts that we need to make sure that we continue and expand those portions of the curriculum that keep students involved and keep them there, you know, whether it's art or music or vocational education. So I just wanted to get a clarification on that point before we go further.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, you are correct. My rhetoric, being a village student and a village child growing up out here, sometimes I don't always make my point directly. With the emphasis in reading, writing, and math over the last 5, 6, 7 years, it's been very difficult to offer the creativity of additional and focus on additional content areas. You've heard Diane George state earlier regarding, you know, Superintendent Diamond stating that his son coming home to the dinner table and saying, is there anything else to do? We definitely need to spend more on additional creative subjects, whether it's history, whether it's art, music, but we still need to take our focus. For too long, our focus, you know, and probably others may disagree with me, but this is my opinion, you know, our focus on basketball away, and still have basketball and have it provided by the community, but and you know, some related to the school, but really, really getting down and putting creativity and back into learning through other content areas and not necessarily sports. Sports are good, sports are healthy, having a good nutritional program is healthy. I'm not against those, it's just I think the community should know that once our kids start doing better academically and the parents are involved, then we can put basketball back in and cross-country running. But for now, with the emphasis from the state being and from the federal government being, we need to improve. And all our kids, you know, are more than a year or so behind. And it's difficult when you look at an urban school district and you expect a child to grow 9 months and 9 months of teaching, and that child is not behind but on grade level. And when you come to rural Alaska, and when a child is 3 years behind grade level, how in the heck am I going to be able to, as an educator, be able to teach? When I taught in the classroom, you know, I didn't have super standards, but I really focused my teaching on where the needs of those children, and looking at their old ITBS CAT scores and seeing where exactly it is that I need to be able to help these children do better and spend that time and emphasis.
Thank you, John. I just wanted to get a clarification on that. We are going to have to rush through, and I'm sorry we have to rush through. We do also have the UConn School District online, and I want to give them a few minutes, and we do go on the floor at 10:30. So if Alex and Brian and Dave want to make short comments, that would be appreciated, but I do want to I don't want to make it so that the UConn School District doesn't get to testify at all. So if you could make brief comments, I would very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is Alex Rustin, Assistant Superintendent. I'm going to take less than a minute to pose one question to you, and I hope that it will support some of the statements made by earlier superintendents. What does DEED stand for? And I ask, what does that acronym stand for?
Well, it's Department of Education and Early Childhood Development, so.
Yes, sir, thank you. And I didn't mean for that to be a derogatory question, but I think what we've done in the education setting has, we've put a lot of acronyms in place, and we have failed to really remember what those acronyms are about. And I'd like to say the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development is charged, I hope, with providing early childhood development for all of the kids in our state. And I would like for that to be a refocused point at a state level, and then subsequently throughout all the districts and schools and villages in our communities. And so I would just like to support what other superintendents have said in terms of refocusing our energies and efforts toward early childhood development.
Thank you
for allowing me to provide that. And as Superintendent Lamont said, we will provide additional written testimony. And please send us the questions that you are sending to the other districts so that we may respond to those as well.
Yes, and we'll have Representative Wilson do that, and we may have some others to add on as well. So thank you very much for keeping it brief as well, and we appreciate the focus. Brian, are you there, and would you identify yourself for the record and go ahead with a quick testimony?
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. This is Brian Crochelle, and I'll keep it simple. I think the other districts did an excellent job of representing our needs. I want to emphasize what Commissioner Sampson said, or past Commissioner Sampson, when he said that, you know, preschool is important, but it also needs to be connected to the schools and carried through to grade three, because I think part of our issue is the disconnect with our preschools and our school system, that there's not that continuity. And then one more thing I want to say is that I hope that part of the recognition in our districts and rural areas, we are getting we are an intervention district because our students are graduating late, or they have poor scores on their tests. And I think that we should be recognized for taking kids that enter our school system that are 2 to 3 years behind. And if they can graduate only 1 year behind, I think that should be considered a success. And that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. Dave, did you have a short comment as well?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I do have just a quick and short comment.
And Dave, would you identify your name on the record?
Yeah, my name is Dave Sharstrom.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm Director of Improvement in the Lower Yukon School District. I guess the focus in most intervention schools right now, and probably schools in Alaska, is on academics. And I think John alluded to the fact that he would like to see creativity, or if you ask students, they would say, how can we bring some fun activities back into education? Because we're an intervention district, we have teachers that focus on reading, writing, and math all day. Reading, writing, and math in the morning, reading, writing, and math in the afternoon, reading, writing, and math Monday through Friday. And they do that because of the pressure of the state scores, but also the pressure of being an intervention district, plus having to bring many of their students up to grade level that are 2 to 3 years behind. This is my 12th year in Bush, Alaska, and over these last 12 years, I've always handed out surveys to students in the springtime to get their feedback on education. And this common factor appears every spring. A school has gotten boring over the last 4 or 5 years. And when I ask students to clarify that, they keep saying school isn't fun anymore because everybody is focusing on academics, academics, academics. I know you have to have balance, and it would be nice to bring the fun, the sparkle courses back into education, but I know a lot of administrators are struggling with scheduling, and there's only so much time in the day, starting at 8:30 going till 3:30 or 4 o'clock. It's like I said earlier, we're really focusing in on academics most of the time, but the students and
outside sources want us to slowly add everything back into the curriculum, which means the electives, the vocational courses, sporting activities, and so forth. So it's really difficult to balance all that currently right now. And I'll just stop right there, but that was an issue that I did want to bring up.
Okay, and thank you very much. And now we'll go to the Yukon School District. Carrie Boyd, are you online?
Yes, this is Carrie Boyd with Yukon Koyukuk School District and Carol Doyle. I'm the superintendent. Carol is the director of curriculum and instruction. We have 2 minutes to put in hours worth of comments. I'll just highlight our points and thank you for this opportunity. In reviewing the court order and your request yesterday was to get some feedback from us, what could help. I'll reiterate, we do need quality pre-K programs. We were a fortunate recipient of the pilot grant, and it is working. Funding will run out, so we're hoping to we would have that. We would also like you to consider extended learning opportunities for students. We have taken two of our schools from level five in corrective action, brought them all the way up to making AYP in 2 years in a row, and extended learning was a big part of that success, so please consider that. Very prescriptive, targeted professional development in areas of assets and resiliency, not just looking at the academic side of the child, but also the social-emotional assistance with this. And as far as curriculum alignment, the state has given us many great suggestions. They've given us good technical support. They've put us in a good direction with the challenges that we face. They've been a great partner. The curriculum alignment, I must say, however, has been the most daunting, and we are working at it. We continue to work at it. We know it's important, but more assistance with curriculum alignment and would be very helpful. We have Carol Doyle. I'll let her talk in just a second, but she has spent the last year focusing on what's required to be put in place where her time could have been used, I think, a little bit more productively in working directly with teachers out on site. But the paperwork that's required of a district of our size, which we cover 65,000 square miles, seven of the sites only by airplane, the two others are a four-hour drive. So that has been an area that we would like more assistance with, and I'm going to turn this over to Carol.
Carrie, Representative Keller has a quick question or comment here for you.
I just wanted to say hi, Carrie, and thank you for your hard work.
Hi. Good to hear from you. Thank you.
And we hope you have written testimony. We will also, Representative Wilson is writing up the questions that she had proposed to some of the other districts, and we will send them to you as well if you would like to respond to those. But if you have written testimony and suggestions, we would appreciate that. You know, the bells are ringing for the floor, so if Carol could make her comments brief, we'd appreciate that. And would you, Carol, would you identify yourself on the record?
This is Carol Doyle, the Director of Instruction and Curriculum for Yukon Koyukuk School District. I'll just say I've been in the state for 14 years, and I've been in four rural areas, and the problems that we have in rural areas are pretty much the same whether it's a school making AYP or not. My particular job in UIK is curriculum, and we have been, I guess I would say, fortunate to be involved in the department's alignment process. We did, we were part of the team that did help unpack the standards for the curriculum alignment, which started last year. And so we have moved all through that process with both reading and writing. But I want to tell you, it's a huge process. We used committees, we used other administrators, other teachers, myself, another mentor teacher at the district office, and I agree with Carrie that this time would have been better spent. out at the sites with teachers and making sure that the curriculum was actually implemented. We have good curriculum, and we have standards-based curriculum, but we don't really have the resources to take care of all the things that need to happen out in the villages. So if the Department of Ed would take over more of the curriculum process, so that we don't end up doing all the paperwork, that would be really helpful to us.
That's very good and a good point, and I think that part of the process here has been, you know, looking at local control and taking away local control on curriculum. And I'm hearing the frustration from many points that, you know, at some point, putting all the energy into developing and aligning the curriculum, you know, is something that sucks so much time locally that it is difficult. And if the curriculum were there and, you know, more or less for aligned with rural Alaska and could be implemented in each of the districts, it might be a more productive way to go. So was that basically what you were saying?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would like to make one more point.
Sure.
And that is that our students will do better when the focus is in the classroom. A lot of our focus with curriculum and mentoring teachers and those kinds of things have not been in the classroom. We have been fortunate to have a huge grant where we can actually have great professional development, and that has been a great help to our teachers. But where the rubber hits the road is what happens in the classroom. And if we have to spend too much time in the paperwork part of doing the curriculum, that is not going to help our students achieve.
Great. Thank you. And as you know, this committee created legislation and passed out to eliminate the huge burden of paperwork that lots of rural Alaska has to suffer with the 30%, no more 30% of based in administration. And we're trying to get rid of that since we have better tools to look at student instruction. So I do appreciate everyone's attention to this, and we will be submitting to you questions that if you would like to participate in that process with us, that's fine. You're not required to, but we are trying to gather the information so that the legislature can move forward in exercising its controls and responsibilities. So with that, it is 10:35, and we will be adjourned. Thank you again.